continuing the halachas of Kriya. Last week we spoke a little bit about how a person tears Kriya, which begadim one is required to take Kriya on. Now the question becomes in terms of the Zman Kriya, when is the proper time for a person to take Kriya? So we mentioned in the previous year that the Gemara says that if a person is standing, Shas Yitzias Neshama, a person is standing and watching anybody who passes away, even if it's not his relative, he's supposed to tear Kriya. Whether or not we practice that is a different question of Zman Azeh. But when it comes to one's relatives, so Lechora, the correct time to tear Kriya would be right away. When a person passes away, so Shas Yitzias Neshama, so Ein Lecha Zman of Kriya Golem Mizeh. So even though that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that a person should tear Kriya for the relative, Shas Yitzias Neshama, many don't have that practice with Zman Azeh. And the Poskim write, the reason for that practice is that the Chacham and later generations were concerned that if a person is going to tear Kriya at the time of Yitzias Neshama, there isn't necessarily going to be a rub around to instruct him how to do it. He may tear the wrong bag, it may tear the wrong way, it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable afterwards. So to avoid any confusion in terms of making sure the person tears the Kriya properly, so the meaning became in many communities to push the Kriya off. The Kriya is done under the auspices of a rub. Someone who's supervising the Kriya should be done properly. How can you push it off? If it's buying Kriya, is it Shas, it's Yes, and Shamas? The answer is the Gemara itself says that as long as it's still considered to be Bishas Chibum, as long as the Avail is still distressed, is still upset, so they can technically fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya. The person tears Kriya 5 years later, so that's not considered to be a Kriya. But as long as it's still Bishas Chibum, so that would be a right. So that's why they usually, the minigan in America usually is that they do it at Leviathan. That's usually what takes place. That's for sure still considered to be a Shas Chibum, and that would be acceptable. The Yerushalmi discusses doing Kriya at a strange time. Yerushalmi talks about what if a person does Kriya on Shabbos. Let's say somebody dies on Shabbos and they want to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya on Shabbos itself. So Yerushalmi says that's a bad idea. That was a bad idea. That's also to do. The Mishnah says a Kriya al Mesa is prohibited on Shabbos. Whether or not it's innocent deraisa or not, that's a technical Shabbos question. Those who remember, we spoke about this a lot in Kol Boker a couple of months ago. The Gemara relates this to different aspects of Hilchos Shabbos. Maybe it's considered to be derech makalkel. If a person rips something for a destructive purpose, that's not an issur d'oraisa. So the Gemara says, no, when you're kareya, if you stop ripping clothing for no reason, that would be only an issur d'rabbanan. But if you're ripping the clothing in order to fulfill the mitzvah of kriya, so that's considered to be a constructive reason. That's a productive thing. You're trying to do something that's a quote-unquote a good thing. So we can't exempt you based on the principle of makalkel. And there's another question. Maybe it's called, it's not called a kareya, but a slitfar. The Mishnah says that the only time one is chayef for ripping on Shabbos is if one rips with the intent of resewing. So here, when a person rips the shirt, he's not planning on resewing it for care. The din is that very often the kriya is not permitted to be resewn. So how could he possibly be chayef for that? So that's a question. So there are some who bring a raya from here, but you see that when the Mishnah says in Shabbos a kareya manas litfar is chayef, it doesn't mean literally amenas litfar. It doesn't mean you have to literally want to resell it. As long as you're doing it for a constructive reason, that's also good enough. That's Rabbi Kivega's raya. So it's in Machlokes Rabbi Shimon and in Hilchos Shabbos. In Hilchos Shabbos, some Rishonim say the Ritva writes that you need amenas litfar mamish. And Rabbi Kivega says that's understands against the Gemara. The Gemara says in Feirish that a Kareya Meso could potentially be chayav on Shabbos because it's considered to be derech tikkun, not derech kilkul, and doesn't seem to be any real requirement to amenas litfar. So okay, that's a technical malacha problem, whether they're ripping kriya on Shabbos, their rice, their bottom. Everyone agrees not supposed to do it. Everyone agrees that it's the wrong thing to do. That halacha carries over in terms of when a person goes and sees the Makom HaMikdash. So we mentioned also that the Gemara says at the end of the Seches Menkot and the Chazal instituted a whole bunch of other kriyos. If a person sees the Sefer Torah that's destroyed, if a person sees the Makom HaMikdash B'chumano, so one is required to take kriya as well. So just as you are not permitted to take kriya for a relative on Shabbos, you're not permitted to take kriya for the Makom HaMikdash on Shabbos either. So if a person hasn't been in the Kosel in 30 days, and they see the Makom HaMikdash, so they're going on Shabbos, and they obviously wouldn't take kriya on Shabbos. Does that mean they don't take kriya afterwards? That, we alluded to this a little bit at the end of the show last week. That's the machlokes. So Moshe has a chiddush. Moshe writes, when a person goes to the Makom HaMikdash on Shabbos, they're really chayav in kriya. It's just that Shabbos prevents them from doing it. So as soon as Shabbos is over, they have to take kriya. Not that they have to go back to the Kosel from Mitzvah Shabbos to Tikkun. Remember, they are. Now they're back in the hotel room, and they're nowhere near the Kosel, so they have to Tikkun on their Shabbos shirt right then and there. So most people don't follow that. Most of the other poskim assume no, that we call Hov and Nichi Yedocha. That since at the time of seeing them up on Mikdash, you didn't have to Tikkun. It's not like a relative. When a relative dies in Shabbos, so then you don't Tikkun on Shabbos, and Mitzvah Shabbos you Tikkun. When you saw them up on Mikdash on Shabbos, if you weren't Chayiv in Kriya then, you couldn't, in effect, Tikkun then. So you're potter, that's it. How you go back the next day? No, you're also potter. Hovin and Chiyadach. One, because when you go back the next day, it's already within 30 days when you saw it the last time, so you get a freebie until the next 30-day breaks. That's what most people follow, that practice. Many people daf go out of their way, daf could go to the Kosel on Shabbos in order to avoid this Shaila. Very often you have it. A lot of people like to go. They haven't been to the Kosel a long time. They like to go Friday night for Kavod Shabbos. The problem is, but they very often they come to the Kosel before Shabbos. So they come in, 20 minutes before Shabbos started. So they're technically chayv in Kriya. So are they mechuf to tear the Shabbos clothes? So that's that question about that. So once in a while, when that happens to me, so what I try to do is that I try to bring the Kavod Shabbos before I actually see the Machmah Mikdash. Because once you're Kavod Shabbos, even though it's early, but you're still not Machmah, then obviously you can't do Kriya. The problem is sometimes it's logistically difficult because a lot of people like to take a cab Friday afternoon to the Kosel, so you can't bring Kavod Shabbos first. So I've done this on occasion. I'll take a cab to the Kosel Friday afternoon, and once we get towards the old city, I keep my eyes closed. And the thing is that if you don't see Haroah, if you don't see the Machmah, if you don't see the Dome, you don't see the Kosel, you're not Chayav. So, as going through Shayafa, that's making the turn. It's about to make that left where you're in the coastal. The Machmah Mikdash comes into view. So you keep your eyes closed, and then when you get out of the car, you just keep your eyes down, and then when you get off by Shiva Kotel, you get off by the Rova, so you can't see it so well. Then you Bekabel Shabbos. I did that one time. We got out at the parking lot. So we got out there. It's Bekabel Shabbos. And then it was Bekabel Shabbos. Can't take Korea anymore. So you have to just try to logistically work that out a little bit. But again, obviously one doesn't take Korea on Shabbos. On Friday afternoon, one presumably does take Korea. There's no reason not to take Korea on Friday afternoon. So that's what Toskim point out. And Yerushalayim is a very difficult minhag to understand, that people don't take Korea on the Machmah Mikdash on Friday afternoon. So I'm not exactly sure where this minhag came from. We've quoted in the past, where Shechta thinks that it's a mistake, L'shitosam. There are some people who didn't sit Shiva Friday afternoon. I remember when I was a kid, so people would get up from Shiva at 12 o'clock. That was it. You didn't go Menachem Avol 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, because everyone got up ready at Chatzos. So the Pesach Tshuva quotes, there was such a practice in Europe, right? There was such a mistaken practice in Europe. The Pesach Tshuva quotes all the Poskim and said it was not a mistake. It was wrong. There's no such din. You have to sit Shiva until close to Shabbos. Where did that mistake come from? So that mistake came from the fact that Erev Pesach, so Erev Pesach after Chatzos is already a Shtel Yontif. So there, some Acharonim, right, you don't sit Shiva and Erev Pesach in the afternoon. So some people made the mistake. They carried over Erev Pesach to a regular Erev Shabbos. So that's not correct. So the Shabbos said, he said, it's the same people who he thinks made the same mistake. The same way they didn't sit Shiva in the afternoon on Friday because they held it was almost Shabbos already. So they wouldn't take Kriya on Friday afternoon from the Machmah Mikdash either. So he said, he doesn't think they're right at Luchas Avelos. He doesn't think they're right at Luchas Kriya on the Machmah Mikdash. The problem is that's the meaning in Yerushalayim. A lot of people don't take Kriya Friday afternoon. So I always try not to go to the coast on Friday afternoon for the first time, because the Ikra Din is supposed to take Korea, but nobody does. I felt it's a little bit of a funny thing to do. So I'll always try to aim it. Either I'll go Friday morning or another day during the week, or I'll go Friday night and do it after Shabbos technically starts, after Yom Kippur Shabbos. No, well, the person died in Shabbos. No, I'm not saying that you should. The Mishnah just says that if you do it, you chayev. Skila. It wasn't like there was a whole sugya that says, yeah, you should do it, kamashmal, and you don't do it. No. It was known you shouldn't do it, just the Mishnah says that it's an issa derais. And then the Gemara questions, is it really derais for some of the reasons that we mentioned before? Yes, that's Rishami. So the Rishami talks about that. The Rishami says if a person does it, so then did he ever do Yotzei Kriya? So Shaila is, how are they Yotzei Kriya? Is it a mitzvah of Yaveira? So the Rishami gives some kind of a cryptic answer. That's not a mitzvah of Yaveira. Why is it not a mitzvah of Yaveira? So could it be that the Rishami means that since you could have done it Behetta on Sunday, that's not called mitzvah of Yaveira. Mitzvah of Yaveira means when it's mamish, the Yaveira that's enabling you to do the mitzvah. Not for the Yaveira, I couldn't have figured out, I couldn't say I'd do this mitzvah here. You would have waited an hour, you could have done it Behetta. So maybe that falls short in terms of mitzvah of Yaveira. So there's a lot of lumdus in that Rishami from the mitzvah of Yaveira vantage point. But tachlis, lemaisi, now we'll do it on Shabbos. Oh, so that's exactly what we're talking about. Good. I'm glad you asked the question. Literally the next part. So what are the other Zman of Kriya? Any other times that one doesn't take Kriya? So obviously one doesn't take Kriya in Shabbos, one doesn't take Kriya in Yom Tov. What about a Chol HaMoed? Is there any reason not to take Kriya in Chol HaMoed? So this was actually the Machlekes HaRishonim. So there's a sugya in the end of Maseches Maikotan that talks about something about Kriya and something about Chol HaMoed, and most of the Rishonim interpreted the Gemara to mean that you take Kriya in Chol HaMoed like any other day. There's no... There's an issue of malacha and chol hamoed to some extent, but malacha is that a litzarach hayom and ma'aseh hedyo. There's no malacha problem. It should be a problem of tearing kriya and chol hamoed. It's a ma'aseh hedyo. Anybody can figure out how to tear their clothing, and it's done. It's litzarach hayom because there's a bits of kriya. So based on luchos malacha and chol hamoed, it should be okay. The question is it some kind of a violation of avelus and chol hamoed? We know that a kovah mesa beregel doesn't really observe avelus. Maybe observes avelus b'tzina, but doesn't ever observe some kind of avelus for hesia. That's a shaila. Do you say that the tearing of kriya is like avelus? We already mentioned last week that kriya luchud v'avelus luchud. The Gemara has differences between kriya and avelus. They're not exactly the same halacha. So most of the Rishonim were of the opinion that one does tear regular kriya on chol hamoed. And there was one dissenting view. One Rishonim said their interpretation of the sugi, the other Maikotan, came out that one doesn't tear kriya on chol hamoed. So how do we practice? So there are more quotes that there was a custom in Europe in some communities that they would split between kriya for a parent and kriya for other relatives. Kriya for avi v'imo is considered to be a higher level. We already pointed out last week. That's why you have to tear a little bit more, different ways for avi v'imo. It's a more inclusive kriya. So the stricter mitzvah of kriya for avi v'imo is doicha even chol hamoed, whereas kriya for other relatives should not be done a chol hamoed. That's the one minhag that the Rambam writes. And the Rambam writes to other places who didn't have that minhag. Other places have the minhag that you tear normally, even for other relatives. So the later post can point out that it's totally for minhag hamakom. So if there's a minhag hamakom to follow that view of the Rishonim to split between other imam and others, they should follow that view. If there's no clear-cut minhag hamakom that way, so then the ikra din is like the other Rishonim. So is there a minhag here in America? What?
Normally,
yeah. I thought that the standard minhag in America was. You were involved in this. Israel, remember, was there?
They did.
Everyone took Kriya. Even the other relatives. Were the other relatives there?
No,
you know?
other relatives,
that's right, yeah.
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 I guess so. They took
Kriya. I think that's the standard minhag. That other minhag is not so popular as much. It's hard to really understand the other minhag because there are differences in gradation of how much you take Kriya, but the mice it's the same as Kriya for a relative and for parents. So it's hard to understand exactly the source of that Kriya. Oh, so Machmah Mikdash, yes, that's interesting. Would you tear from Machmah Mikdash on Chol HaMoed? So I'll tell you, Ma'aseh Shai Kachaya, that this goes back when I was learning in Kibbutz Yavne. So it was Chol HaMoed Sukkis. I had already been at Mikdash. People I was staying by for Yom Tov, so it was Chol HaMoed, and the relatives came from Bnei Brak. Chashav Rav came from Bnei Brak to visit the people I was staying by, and he came with his two sons. And I remember they all walked in with their shirts ripped. So they hadn't been in Shalim in 30 days. So they had all ripped. So remember that the host who I was staying by, it's also Shtatam Chanfli, he says, oh, Shmamina, it's his brother-in-law. So Shmamina, my brother-in-law, Kepaskin, that you have to take Kriya and Chol HaMoed. That was the only Ma'aser Rav that I ever saw on this topic. So one that I can't tell you. I think probably we didn't have to. I think that's... Right. I was thinking about that. Yeah, right. Because even when you take Kriya and Chol HaMoed, I think they take off the Kriyas, unless they held that wasn't really available. Because it could be that the Avelus, the Kriya from Machmah Mikdash is not really available to Kriya. I don't know. I'm not sure. I remember once in Kibbutz Yavne. So there was a boy who hadn't been at the Kosel for a while, and they were going for Yom Yerushalayim. But they used to go like in the middle of the night, down the Sikh in Yom Yerushalayim. There was a boy who asked one of the Rabbanim there, should he take Kriya on Yom Yerushalayim? I guess it depends who you would ask on this Shaila. I guess some people you would ask, they would say, what's the Shaila? They wouldn't even understand what you're talking about. So I think that was the only time that this Rav said, maybe you should follow the eights of selling somebody your shirt, even though we don't usually like to encourage that. But I think he felt that would be such a dakir shalom. I think people there would get so upset to see his walk. I think who knows what group he's coming from. Walks in the Yom Yerushalayim celebration, tears Kriya. I think people would think that was funny. So he thought, dakir shalom, you shouldn't do that. I remember one time I saw Kriya and a guy started screaming at me. The guy Mamma starts screaming, he says, what are you doing? You're in Kriya. It's this man of Ula already. So okay, I don't want to start arguing or whatever. That's the guy gets very, very upset. That's why I always do it quickly inside and go right into the bed. Okay, anyway, getting back to this story. So then, after a person tears kriya, so we said the person is supposed to wear the beggar karua. Well, not exactly, it depends. Let's say, going back to kriya for other email, going back to kriya for regular relatives. So the din is that there's not a chiyuv to wear the beggar, that's karua. There's a mitzvah to tear kriya. The only problem is that for other email, the halacha is that in bal hachlif karea, if you want to change your clothing, you're not chiyuv to wear that shirt. You can switch another shirt. The only problem is you have to rip the other shirt also. So that's why most people, when they're sitting here with their parents, keep pretty much the same shirt on. When it gets hot, they switch them one time. But you don't want to switch every day. Otherwise, you have to rip every shirt that you have. So for other email, there's a special halacha in bal hachlif karea. For other relatives, there is no such halacha. Therefore, technically, a person can really take off the shirt afterwards and sit in a regular shirt. Most people don't do that. That's the image of sitting shiva. Doesn't fit that way. But for other relatives, it would be okay. What about if the shiva is over? So a person already ripped the shirt, he already took off the shirt, he's already back to wearing his regular clothes, and now he wants to sew up the kriya. So the Gemara has a whole complicated discussion about how and when you're allowed to sew up the kriya. So the Gemara has distinctions. Are you sewing it in a normal way and in a not normal way? Is it if the shiva is it, the shlo shiva is it, the imam, other relatives, all kind of different calculations as to what you're allowed to do. At the end of the day, I don't think anyone's going to ever do any of this stuff. There's Manazef who's going to sew up a kriya shirt, take a kriya shirt off the shiva and throw it into the garbage. So the whole thing is not too relevant. The only part of it that is relevant, Lamaisa, is that the Gemara says there's a difference between a man and a woman. That a woman, we're a little bit more megalon, and even during shiva itself, a woman can sew up the kriya, but she could show, she could touch it up a little bit. She can do some kind of like an uneven stitching on the shirt. It shouldn't be a breach of tzniyas. So the post can point out that our modern day equivalent to that would be like to put a safety pin in or something. If you're not sewing it up literally, but you're just closing it up, it doesn't look like it's ripped. So that would be permissible for a woman. Now, if permissible, we recommend that also. That's the nice what we do. When a woman tears kriya, so she tears the kriya, and then right away somebody gives the safety pins, and she should close it up so it shouldn't be a breach of tzniyas. In general, when women tear kriya, so one has to be very careful. Normally, the Gemara has a distinction when you tear kriya between for a parent and for other relatives, whether there should be other people around or not. The Gemara uses the lashon that for other relatives you can be kareya betzina, you don't have to kareya publicly. Of ima, you have to be kareya in a more public manner. So some of the Rishonim say that in a more public manner just means it should be more visible. And other Rishonim say, no, there should really be people around, because of the ima is such an expression, such a agus nefesh, such a terrible, distress and a covered for his parents. So the more people around, the better. And the post can point out that you don't have to have 1,000 people around. It shouldn't be done privately. A couple of people should be around when you rip of the emails. So you have to be careful when a woman tears kriya. You don't have to have men around. You have the women around. She's standing in the corner, and the woman should tear in a proper manner. And then immediately somebody should have the safety pins, should close it up. It shouldn't be a breach and a violation of tzinias. Okay, I think we finished pretty much the kriya part of the sugya. We'll try to move on to the next brand of sugya. So we're not yet done with Hukas Avelos, but we're not done with Chazavelos, but we are done with Chazavelos. We're done with, at least for now, we're done with the parts that we consider to be Chazavelos. But then there's a whole series of other halachas that appear in Shulchan Aruch that almost tacked onto Chazavelos because there's no other place to put them. So these involve different sugyas of Kvuras Ameis and Desa Kvaras sugyas and things related to that. And a big chunk of that area is the din of Tumas Kohanim. So from here on in, we're going to talk a little bit about the sugyas of Tumas Kohanim and the mitzvah of Kvura and some of the related Isurim related to Halonas Ameis and autopsies and all of that kind of stuff and how one behaves in a basic Kvura. So that's almost like the addendum to Hilchos Avelos proper. So we'll begin with the sugya of Tumas Kohanim. Shulchan Aruch quotes all of these dinim right smack in the middle of Hilchos Avelos. Of course, we know the Pesukim tells the Parshas Emor that it's a mitzvah Torah for a Kohen to become Tameh unless it's one of his relatives, and that's in fact the source, at least according to some Rishonim, that's actually the source for Avelos. From the fact that the Torah says that the Kohen should be Tameh for his relatives, it's a mitzvah. It's actually a mitzvah we pass in for a Kohen to become Tameh. Why is there a mitzvah? Because we want the Kohen to take care of the mace. We want the Kohen to be distressed over his mace. We want him to be misabel. That's what the Rambam uses the phrase in Hilchos Avel. Kama chamura mitzvah savelos. You see how strict the Torah gives the halachas of avelos, how serious the Torah gives it, that the Torah says it even zdeich, it even pushes off the otherwise issa for a Kohen to become tamei. Because the normal circumstances, short of a relative, so there's an issa in a Torah for a Kohen to become tamei to his mace. When we speak about a Kohen becoming Tamei Tumas Meis, so there is a parallel Erev Halacha, those who learned Daf Yomi, they still have fond memories of the end of Maseches Nazir, but the Gemara speaks about certain comparisons between the dinim of a Kohen becoming Tamei Tumas Meis and a Nazir becoming Tamei Tumas Meis. A Nazir is a little bit more chomer. A Nazir is not allowed to become Tamei even for his relative. That's closer to the Kohen Gadol model, but there are definitely similarities between the Isurim of a Kohen becoming Tamei and a Nazir becoming Tamei. So the first question that we're going to deal with, that we should discuss, is just how similar are those parallels? Just how exact is the definition of what constitutes Tumas Meis for a Nazir and what constitutes Tumas Meis for a Kohen? So when it comes to a Nazir, there are actually two different types of Tumas Meis relating to a Nazir. There are what's called Tumas Shanozim and Galeach Aleim, in contrast to Tumas She'ein a Nazir and Galeach Aleim. When a Nazir becomes Tamei, so not only did he violate a Nisr, but there are repercussions in terms of his Nazirus. That is, Nazirus got cancelled. He was up to day 26 of his Nazirus, and he's getting ready, Atot, in 4 days to bring his Karbonus and end his Nazirus, and then he became Tamei by mistake. He didn't do anything wrong. He was visiting someone's house, all of a sudden somebody died. So Nebuchadnezzar became Tamei, so Batimei Rosh Nizrael, so then whatever Hayamim Arishayim Yiplu Ki Tamei Nizrael. But all the days that he counted up to now were just Nistar, were just cancelled, and he's got to start all over again. And he can't even just start all over again tomorrow. He's got to first become Tahar, then he's got to bring a series of Karbanas Nazir Tamei, and then and only then he starts Vizil Hashem Shemei Nizrael. Then he starts to count again. So if he was only a Nazir for 30 days, he got caught on day 26, Ishkafelach. What if he took a specific Nazir, he wants to be a Nazir for 7 years, or she, Hilni Amalka, wants to be a Nazir for 7 years. So the Mishnah tells a story that there's a queen, Hilni Amalka, she took a long, long Nazirus, that she wants to be a Nazir for a long amount of time. The day before she's ready to bring a Kabbalah, she became Tamei. She's got to start all over again. So that's a din that's called a Tumah She'Nazir Megaleach Aleihem. It's a tumah that requires the nazir to start over again, and part of the process of starting all over again is he has to bring his karbanos, and part of that process he has to shave his head. Normally a nazir is not allowed to cut his ear. Here he has to be galech his ear in order to start the nazir's patara over again. So only certain types of tumas warrant this whole procedure of tumas she'nazir galech aleihem. Only certain types of tumas meis force the nazir to actually start all over again, shave his head, and start the whole process from the beginning. There are other kinds of tumas meis which the nazir is not supposed to do. He's not supposed to come into contact with the meis in way X, Y, and Z, but it's not considered to be as severe of a tumah, and therefore what he did was osir, but it's not soisir. It doesn't destroy, it doesn't start the whole count over again. So there are two different types of tumas in vis-a-vis Hilchos Nazirus. The higher level of tumas, she'nazir megaleach aleihem, and the lower level of tumas meis, that ain't a nazir megaleach aleihem. So there is a comment, a very cryptic comment, that appears in Maseches Smachos. Maseches Smachos is quoted in the past. It's a compilation of different brises that were written by the Tanoim. It's not in Shas Bavli proper. It's printed in the back of Maseches Avodah Zarah in the Gemaras, but it's not Shas Bavli proper. On the other hand, it has a lot of authority in Halacha, in Hilchos Avodos. You have similar, like Maseches Smachos, Maseches Kala, Maseches Zecha. You have a bunch of what's called Maseches Ketanos that are not really Maseches, not really Gemaras. They're really a collection of different brises. So in Maseches Smachos, some of the Rishonim, so it's called Eva Rabosi. It's the same thing. You see, some Rishonim quote Eva Rabosi, some call Maseches Machos. So in Maseches Machos, it has a very cryptic line. It says, Kol Tuma Sheha Nozim Galeach Aleihem Kohen Muzer Alav, Kol Tuma Sheha Eina Nozim Galeach Aleihem Eina Kohen Muzer Alav. That only the higher level of tumas, which can cause a nazir to have to take his haircut and start the whole process over, bring karbanos and start the nazirus from scratch, only those higher level tumas are a problem for a kohen. If you have a lower level kind of a tumah, so then you don't have to worry about it. Then the kohen doesn't have to be concerned with that. That's not a type of a tumah that the Torah prohibited. So that statement in Maseches Machos opens up a whole discussion in the Rishonim on two levels. First of all, do we even postulate that equation? So in all of Maseches Nazir, when a lot of these sugars appear, and other sugars in Shas that talk about Tumas Kohanim, there's no mention of this statement. So it appears tucked away in Maseches Machos. So we're not sure. Does that mean that we follow it? Or do we say that it's such a radical chiddush that it should have appeared somewhere in Shas Bavli and it doesn't? Maybe that means that we don't posculate like that. That's question number one. Question number two, if we do accept that, what are the ramifications of that? What are some of these examples? We've been talking in the air now. what are some practical applications of this principle? So the first question was, the Machlekes Rishonim, do we even accept this principle in the first place? So this would be a great kula, assuming that we knew what those tumas were or not, would be a great kula. So Tosfos quotes in the name of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam said he doesn't think that this thing is true. The whole Maseches Machos is not true. And Rabbeinu Tam says, I bring a raya brew from the Gemara. In order to reject the Maseches Machos, you have to bring a raya from Chazal. You can't just say, we don't follow it. You have to bring a raya from the Gemara. So Rabbeinu Tam said, I bring a raya, because we know for a fact that there is a type of a tumah that a kohen is not allowed to come into contact with, even though it wouldn't be enough for a nazir to be megalech. What's the example of such a tumah? So when it comes to a dam and hameis, there's a din that of a dam and hameis is metame. You don't, the whole mace is not here, but you have blood that came out of a person after he died. So dam and hameis. So it happens to be a din, so get tucked away in the Maseches Nazir, that if a nazir comes into contact with a chatzi lug of dam and hameis, then he has to be megalech. Chatzi lug, it's a revius alug is about, we call a revius about 3 ounces, so lug is about 12 ounces, we have 6 ounces. So if he happens to come to contact, he's got a big test tube of blood, and it came out after the person dies, it's dam and hameis. So if the nazir comes into contact with that, he would have to be megalech. That would have to start the nazir itself again. Anything less than that, so the nazir wouldn't have to be megalech. Pasha says this is halacha Moshe Sinai. This is not just an arbitrary number, this is halacha Moshe Sinai, that a nazir is megalech on a chatzi lug. The din is that a kohen is not permitted to come into contact even with a revius alug. The Gemara says beferish that it's also for a kohen to come into contact even with a quarter of a lug of dam min hameis. So comes a bit of time and says, you see from here that the din are not the same. You see from here that you can have a tumah that ain't a nazir megalech alav. This very, very small window of opportunity between a quarter of a lug and half lug, talking about a couple ounces of blood. So you have a small window of opportunity that it wouldn't affect Tuchas Naziris. It wouldn't cause the nazir to start over again. And Afal Bichay, the Gemara says explicitly that a kohen can't come into contact with. It says, Rabbeinu Tam, you see from here that the whole rule of Maseches Machos is not true. So Tosfos quotes others who disagree, saying, no, that's not a raya. When the Maseches Machos says that called tumash in a nazir galech alav in a kohen muzer alav, what that means is that a type of tumah. It means you have a certain part of Hilchos tumah that was only said the vis-a-vis a nazir being osir, but not to be so sad, not to be galech. If that type of tumah is not enough to cause a nazir to be galech, that's not a type of tumah to be osir for a kohen. Here, dam is the same type of tumah. It's just it's a quantitative difference, not a qualitative difference. A couple of ounces here, a couple of ounces there. So kach nemer halacha Moshe Sinai. Ask a kasha and halacha Moshe Sinai. Why the shear is this way and that way and the other way? But fundamentally, dam in a mace is a tumah that affects the nazir. So if a nazir has 6 ounces, so he has to be megalech. If a kohen has 3 ounces, he's not allowed to do it. But to say that that's a type of a tumah that ain't a nazir megalech, well, that's a little bit of a stretch. So the other Rishonim disagreed. Many of the Baliatais disagreed with Rabbeinu Tam. So that would not be a good raya, either for or against the Maseches Machos. You still can't tell whether we follow the Maseches Machos. So what are some real examples? What are some practical examples of things that may be subject to this Maseches Machos to test whether this is correct or not? So there is a pasuk in Chumash in Parshas Chukas that speaks about all the different parts of a mace that a person can't come into contact with. So you can't be etzem adam or recover, all the different parts, chalacher, of a mace. So in the middle of those psukim, the Torah speaks about mecholah sheyigal pnei hasadeh. A person is going to touch a pnei hasadeh, they're going to come into contact with a mace just lying around that outside. So al pnei psasadeh, what exactly does that mean? What is that coming to include? So the Gemara says we have a tradition that's coming to include a goyel of a doifek. That's coming to include something which is not the mace proper, but it's close to the mace, it's connected to the mace, it's some shachas to the mace, it's also matame to mas mace. B'choshe you go up there, so the rabbi's goyel of a doifek. The only problem is, we have no idea what the goyel of a doifek are exactly. So it's a machlekes harishonim, what the words mean in terms of a goyel of a doifek. So Rashi says that goyel of a doifek refers to different parts of the coffin. So even though the person doesn't come into contact with the mace proper, but they come into contact with the coffin, with the Aaron, so that's considered to be the goal of a doifek that Chazal were referring to. So you may remember back when we spoke about, back a while ago, we spoke about when does Avelus begin. So the Gemara uses the phrase, Mishayistam HaGoylel. When the Goylel is closed, that's when the Avelus kicks in. So Rashi says, what does Goylel mean? When the coffin is closed. So there were some who said, but that's Rashi, that the Avelus begins, the Shiva begins, in the funeral hall, when they nail the coffin, when they close up the aron, so that's stima sagoilel, and that's when the avela start to kick in. We don't follow that view. Other Rishonim say that even Rashi didn't mean that. Rashi meant stima sagoilel means not when they close the coffin. It means when they close the coffin with dirt. It means once they start to put the dirt on top of the coffin in the kavura, that's the stima sagoilel of Rashi. But the word goilel does mean the top of the coffin, according to Rashi. So Rabbi Natan is quoted by Tosfos in a few places and saying that's not what goilel means. B'chlal, what goilel means is the matzeva. Goilel means something that's set up as a stone to mark the mace. That's considered to be the goilel that Chazal were referring to. So even though it's not the mace proper, it's there to mark the presence of the mace. So that can be matame in and of itself. So you first could be potentially become tame if they come into contact, halachic contact with the matzeva, even though they didn't come into contact with the mace proper. So that's what Tosfos writes according to Rabbeinu Tam. What does stimus agolo mean? So stimus agolo means when you put up the matzeva. So Tosfos says, yes, put up the matzeva. Put it up 6 months later. So the avails doesn't talk till then. So Tosfos says, no. In the days of the Gemara, apparently they used to put up the matzevas right away. They finished the kavur, they put up the matzeva. You don't have to do that. So the modern day equivalent would be when you finish whatever you were doing. So maybe when you stick the piece of wood in the little temporary matzeva, or maybe when you just finish the covering of the dirt, whatever is the modern day equivalent of the Gemara Kfura, that's what starts the Shiva, according to Rabbi Natan. But the word technically, stimus agoilel, according to Rabbi Natan, means when you cover over with the put a matzeva, put a marker on it. So getting back to the story. So in terms of Hilchos Tumah, so Rashi says that the Aron is Metame, is an independent entity. And Aron is Metame not just because there's a mace inside. The mace is Metame. It's a mace. But the Aron is an independent Metame, even if for some reason the mace wouldn't be Metame. So what are the ramifications of this Shittas Rashi? So there is a Gemara, a famous Gemara in the third Pekhmet Sefer Brachas, where the Gemara talks about Medalgan Inol Gabi Aronis. The Gemara talks about potentially if there's an Aron, you can actually, a Kohen can potentially walk over the Aron. He's going to jump over the Aron. Jump over the Aron. By walking over the Aron, he's going to become Tame. So the Gemara says, not so fast. The Gemara says that the way people are usually buried, is the days of Chazal, when people were buried, so most of the time, believe it or not, the covering of the Aron serves as a hefsek, as a chatzitza, between the body and the tumor spreading up. If there's a mace on the floor, if I touch the mace, for sure I'm Tame. Let's say it's apnea, it's not in a room, there's no OL. So if I touch the mace, I'm tame. Or if I lean over the mace, if I walk over the mace, jump over the mace, I become tame, because too much OL shoots up also. So even though there's no covering, if I'm ma'ayal ala mace, that's mefer, that's a Mishnah. If a person is ma'ayal ala mace, so then he becomes tame as well. So the Gemara talks about the possibility of a person walking over, literally jumping over coffins. Why would a person be jumping over coffins? So the Gemara says that when a mace is inside an aron, so there's an opening of a tefach, there's at least a tefach between the top of the mace's body. The mace is lying flat down in the aron, so from the chest, from the stomach of the mace to the top of the aron is more than a tefach. Usually you don't put the mace in so tight to the top, so there's more than a tefach. So there's a din that when you have an area that's more than a tefach and then a covering over the mace, that's chotzitz b'fnei hatumah. So let's say, for example, there would be a mace in a room and somebody would be on the roof of the building. So you don't become tame, because the tumor shoots up to the roof, and then it stops. It hits the roof, and anyone who's inside the building, on the bottom of the building, becomes tame. But the tumor does not go all the way up to Shemahim. It stops. Why does it stop? Because there's a halacha Moshe Mesinai, that whenever there's a tefach of airspace between the mace and the partition on top of the mace, so kach nemer halacha Moshe Mesinai, that's the end of Tumas El. Tumas El is blocked by the chatzitza. So that's what the Gemara says in Brachas, that whenever you have a mace inside an aron, so the top of the aron is the roof. So the top of the aron prevents the tumor from spreading up. So the Gemara says that min ha-Torah, in theory, a person could touch a coffin. In Min HaTorah, the mace is inside the coffin, and the Kohen would want to touch the top of the coffin, that would be alright. If he wants to walk over the Aron, that would be okay. Jump over the Aron, that would be okay. Because the tumor can't spread, because the top of the Aron is like the roof of the house. It's a Davar HaMafsik. Now the Gemara says that's only true because there's Pesach Tefach, because there's a Tefach between the mace and the top. What if there wouldn't be a Tefach? What if a mace would be buried in such a way that his body is touching the top of the wood in the Tefach of the top? So then that Halach Moshina doesn't apply. So then there's another Halach Moshina that applies. It's called Tumah Ritzutzu Bokas V'Ola L'Rakia. Now whenever you have Tumah, that there's no airspace of a Tefach to to prevent it from stopping, then it shoots all the way up. So if you would have a mace over here, and you would have a top of the aron, it would be right on top of the mace, within the tefach of the mace, so then the tumor is not stopped by the aron. If it can't, then it shoots up, and it keeps on going, and if you're 100 feet up, and you're leaning out the window over the aron, you would become tamei also. These are all dinim, all halacha moshe mesinai. You can say pupul from day till tomorrow, these are kachnims for halacha moshe mesinai, the details of ilchas tumus mace. So putting together those two halacha moshe mesinai, that a tefach is a davar hachaitzeitz, and less than a tefach is not a davar hachaitzeitz. So the Gemara says, so how do we view an aron? Is it aron chotzis or not chotzis? The Gemara says, it depends. If there's a tefach between the top of the mace's belly and the top of the aron, then it is chotzis. It's not. So the Gemara says that rov aron is yesh pasech tefach. Most coffins have a pasech tefach. Most people are buried in such a way that there is a pasech tefach. So min haTorah, you can rely on rov. I don't know whether it's a pasech. I see a given aron on the ground. I have no idea. I can open it up and see whether there's a how large the mace is. I'm not going to take a look and see how much of a break there is. You go with your measuring, with your chazanisha measuring rod to see how much there is. You can assume there's probably a tefach there. So min haTorah, that's not a problem. But since there are some aronos that didn't have that shear, that amount of pasech tefach, so midrabanan, they made a gezerah that they were gozru up to those which don't have a pasech tefach. So therefore, midrabanan, the kohen has to treat the aron as being tamei. So lemaisa, can a kohen jump over an aron? No, because midrabanan, you have to be afraid. Maybe there's no pasech tefach there. But minat Torah, if it is Moshe Ben, he would say it's okay. Minat Torah, it's all right because you can rely on rope. So based on that whole background, the Gemara says, since if a kohen is walking over an aron, it's only a tumah derabanan, because Minat Torah relied on rov, so they lifted that tumah derabanan if it was some very, very big tzerech. What was some big tzerech? So that's a strange story. The Gemara says that to go see a king is considered to be a big tzerech, even though the king didn't call you. It's not a Jewish king, it's a Goyish king. That's considered to be a big tzerech. And the Gemara tells a story of a little bit tzarek, oimer medalgin hayinu al gabi aronis dekras malachim, that when we used to go to the parades, used to go to the inauguration, we want to go see the coronation of the king. So even though we had to jump over the aronos, we had to travel, we had to walk over certain areas, the basic chorus is, walking over certain aronos, it was mutter. And the Gemara says, again, why this was like, I have no idea. But the Gemara says, the reason why this was mutter was because min haTorah, it wasn't the problem anyway, because rov aronos yesh b'pasech tefach. It's only an Issad Rabbanon, and this Issad Rabbanon was lifted by Makom Kavod HaMelech. That's why I state in the Gemara again. Why this was going on, I cannot tell you. I'm just reading it right out of the third Brekha Masech HaZbrachas. Amar Velos B'Tzaduk, Medalgan Ayinu Agabi Aronis, the Kras Malachim, and the Gemara explains what the background was. So if this whole Megillah, so Tosfos Yes Tekash and Rashi, Tosfos says, I don't understand the whole Gemara. The Gemara is only addressing the Tumah Mitzad the mace. What about Mitzad the goal itself? Isn't the coffin itself a problem? We just got finished saying that Al Pnei Asad LaRava's goal of a doifik. Rashi says goelo means the arum, means the coffin itself. So even if there is a pasech tefach between the mace and the top of the coffin, let the arum be a problem. How could a kohen minat Torah? How could a kohen come into contact with the arum? Forget about coming into contact with the mace. How can the arum? How could the kohen come into contact with the arum? Typically, that itself is a problem. That's Tosis. Again, it took Tosis 30 lines to get to this kasha, but it took us 10 minutes to explain the background. And that's Tosis kasha against Rashi. So but tumas, anything that's tummy tumas makes goes up to oil. So the oran itself should be metam, it should shoot up the oil. So that's Tosis kasha on Rashi's pshat in the Stevens Segoilo. So Tosis suggests that maybe the answer to Rashi is like this. This tumor of goal of a doifek, this tumor is a lower level kind of tumas makes. It's a tumas makes, but it's a lower level. And if a nazir, imagine it's not a cut, imagine a nazir would come into contact, not with the mace himself, he would come into contact with the top of the aron. So Tosis says that the nazir wouldn't have to be megaleach for that. Oh, the nazir wouldn't have to be megaleach for that. Then we plug in the Maseches Machos. Kotumash ein nazir megaleach ala, ein kai muzer aleha. So Tosis says that's pshat in Rashi. That Maseches Machos saves the day for Rashi. Obviously, Rabbi Natan is not going to be a big fan of this pshat, because Rabbi Natan said the whole Maseches Machos is not true, l'halacha. So the last thing we want to pin this Gemara on is on the Maseches Machos. But Akol Panim, at least we found an example. It's not the most common shaila, but at least we found an example that Rashi's version of a goylel is something that is a potential tumah she'ein anazim b'galech ala, and some Rishonim want to say that's the pshat in Shita's right. That's how Rashi would read that strange Gemara Maseches Brachos. So we need something a little bit, no pun intended, a little more down to earth, a little bit we can relate to. Something we can relate to a little bit better in terms of what's a real life example of something which is ein anazim b'galech ala. These strange cases of tops of our readers are not going to do the trick for us. So hopefully, next week we'll see. that there's a real, real shayla. I'm not sure. The gear halacha, the ma'aseh shayla, that's the gear for every single kohen, every single day of his life, that actually depends upon the washes, the tumas, the teches. It's going to ultimately depend upon whether we accept this maseches machzor. That's what we look at here.